Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of women and men who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer.
Hi there, I'm Claudia. Today I'm speaking to Rebecca, who's from London, about her personal experience of living with secondary breast cancer. Rebecca has written many inspiring and powerful blogs for us, including a letter to strangers who cannot see that she has cancer. Today I'm talking to her about how she's adapted to life with incurable cancer and how she makes sure that she takes care of herself and her well-being. Rebecca, thank you for joining me.
Pleasure, thank you for having me.
Ah, lovely to see you. I wondered if you could start by telling me a bit about when you were first diagnosed with secondary breast cancer.
Yes, of course. So I had been given the all clear from my primary cancer in July 2017, and I was always a very keen runner, and I was really getting back into my fitness regime, and I went for an 11 mile run in December 2017, beginning of December, and had suddenly some awful pain in my back. I'd been seeing my physio the whole way through my treatment, and I'd been having ongoing physio. She's brilliant, and she diagnosed a dislocated rib. She popped the rib back in. I sat up and I said, it still really hurts. And she said straight away, that's just not right. Sent me to my oncologist who ordered an MRI. And I'd actually booked a pre-Christmas holiday. And just before the holiday, it was told that there was a shadow on my spine and they weren't sure whether it was perhaps dead cancer or something more sinister. So upon my return from holiday, they'd had another look at the scans and diagnosed me with secondary cancer in my spine and pelvis at that stage. So it was confirmed just before New Year, 2017 to 2018, which was a bit of a blow, really.
Yeah. How did you handle that shock?
Well, my oncologist and I have a very good relationship, and she knows that I always want a plan. I'm quite pragmatic, and getting the news was a huge blow, and I was upset because I felt like I barely started to get back on my feet from the primary cancer. But she said straight away, I've got a plan, and put that plan into place. So that made me feel like it wasn't just you've got secondary cancer and oh my goodness, we're not sure what we're going to do. She was very direct and assertive about that she knew what the next steps should be. Immediately after that meeting, I had my sister, who is wonderful. She generally comes with me to meetings like that when we know there's going to be significant news. She's a doctor and she can really help on that front, and my wonderful husband. And when we got outside, I just said to my sister, I can't deal with telling people, so can you just tell the family? And so again, that's something I say to people, if you can't face talking to other people, farm it out, give it to someone else who can do that, because that was an enormous relief for me, because then my husband just said, right, okay, let's just go out for a really nice meal and just take stock. So we went out for this lovely meal that evening, and it was the shock of feeling that life was never the same again, because with the primary diagnosis, you're told, or I was told certainly, that I was young, it was unusual, and we would just hit it with everything they got, and that way I could hopefully be all clear and forget about it and just have it as a story to tell in years to come. But with secondary cancer, you have it's ongoing, you know, it is incurable, terminal, however you want to term it. And so I knew that I was going to be on some sort of treatment for the rest of my life, and having to keep an eye on it and just manage it rather than cure it. So that was a heck of a shock, and coming to terms with the fact it was a lifetime condition. With secondary cancer, it's management and management of the symptoms and stopping the cancer growing too quickly or too greatly. Immediately after this meeting, I couldn't really face talking to anyone. And at the meeting with my oncologist, I had my sister with me, who's wonderful. She's a doctor and she really helps at those sorts of meetings. And I had my husband, who is fantastically practical and tremendous support. So I said to my sister, could you please tell the family and get the family to tell my friends, because I can't go over it time and time again with different people. And so she did that. And I'd say to listeners that if they do have similar situations, people are always willing to help. And if you can find someone who will tell other people, it really takes the burden off you. And that really helped me. And so once she just said, yep, I'll deal with that, don't worry about that. And then my husband said, right, you and I, we're going to go for a really nice meal, just try and digest it a bit, but have a really nice meal out. So that's what we did. And it was trying to get on top of managing, I think it was the huge shock that now it was this incurable lifetime condition. But as the time went on, I've really focused on things like yoga, meditation. Those are really helpful. And I'd not done yoga before. I'd never tried meditation. And meditation took, I know some people, they can't get into it. I couldn't get into it to start with. But now it's so helpful for me. And I do it anywhere and everywhere. So I'd urge people to really hang on with it if you don't settle with it immediately. Yeah. And with the yoga as well, you can do really gentle yoga. There are a lot of cancer-friendly yoga sessions, certainly in London, I hope elsewhere. And for me, getting involved with breast cancer care, it's been tremendously helpful with my blogs, and the reactions to some of the blogs really make me feel good that I'm touching other people, that I'm relating to them. And that's fantastic.
Absolutely. And your blogs have reached thousands upon thousands of people. And I think you talk about conversations and topics to do with secondary breast cancer that people are sometimes afraid to broach, mm-hmm. or aren't necessarily talked about. So you wrote a blog that I mentioned before about a letter to strangers who yes. can't see that you have cancer. Can you tell me a bit about that, about how you manage that relationship with people you don't know, but you need to convey something?
Yes, I'm pretty direct. So, and I know in that piece I wrote about, for example, on the tube and on trains and so on, I personally, I know a lot of people do expect people to look for, you know, badges saying I'm disabled or what have you. I personally don't expect people to be looking at everyone who gets on a train or a tube. So when I get on, I just say quite loudly, you know, excuse me, would anyone please give up a seat? And as I said in that blog, some people just look at me, and I don't look ill. I do really pay, since my secondary diagnosis, I don't think I'm vain, but I certainly pay more attention to my makeup and my hair and my clothing and so on. And I really make an effort to look glamorous, because for me, it's either I'm looking cancery or I'm looking glamorous, and it makes me feel really good to try and, you know, make more of an effort than I used to. So people look at me and they just don't see anything wrong with me. They may spot the lymphedema sleeve, but even that, you kind of have to know about lymphedema to recognise the sleeve, I think. And some people don't react to that. And it slightly hurts my feelings, I suppose. And also part of me thinks I should have that seat. But then again, I think, well, no, because I don't know if they are actually disabled, and it's sort of turning it around as well. And then I think also perhaps I should be flattered that they think there's nothing wrong with me at all. So there's that. And there's also dealing with people I know a bit. And recently my firm, I work for a law firm, and I went in, I was speaking with the HR manager there, and I said, look, would you like me to come in and do a talk? Because they were raising money for breast cancer care. And amazing. I said, would you like me to come in and do a talk and I said, perhaps how to talk to someone with cancer, because for me, I think that's a difficult topic. And I was saying, I was trying to give some guidance, and I did a sort of traffic light symbol, system of red, amber and green of what to say, and if you're not sure what to say with someone with cancer, and that the older you look really well, you look really good. And I was saying to them that actually, if somebody says, you know, I've got cancer, I need a seat or whatever it is, or could I just give me 5 minutes before I stand up because, you know, I'm in pain or what have you, if you say anything, to help. That's really nice. And if you're not sure what to say to someone who has cancer, who doesn't look like they're ill, just anything about tell me what you need or what can I do or it's nice to see you.
I think that's a really good
really
point
nice.
About asking. If you're not sure what to say, then ask. And I think often, if you're wondering what to say to someone with cancer and you feel that you should know what to say, sometimes it's okay not to know and to ask people what they need.
Yes, I think so. And I think going back to the tube and train situation, my opinion is if I ask and I'm there with my blue disability badge, my tube, the tube do one for pregnancy and one for disability. Mm. And if I'm wearing that badge, which I always am, and I say, please, could someone give up a seat? I'm clearly asking for a reason. And it crosses my mind that sometimes people perhaps think I'm being dishonest in some way. And that is a bit hurtful, because I think if you see someone and you're not sure whether to give up a seat, just stand up and just say, oh, I'm getting off at the next stop if you want my seat. I don't think anyone's going to be offended.
Yeah.
I really don't. And I'm just delighted when, and I have had it, I think I wrote in the blog that sometimes almost the entire carriage has leapt up and there's been a fight about who's giving up their seat for me, and then you have to pick and it's really difficult as to who you sort of pick to deprive of a seat. But yes, and I think going into my firm, and it seemed to be well received, and the sort of traffic light system I said about what to say to people with cancer seemed to go down quite well, because I think the main thing, people just, they don't know if they're going to say the wrong thing. Mm. And I think that a lot of them were surprised to hear me say, actually, approaching it is better than not. Because I know from my cancer support groups and my cancer buddies, and from my own experience, definitely the most hurtful thing that can happen is someone who just completely ignores the cancer. And it's only happened with literally one or two people to me, but they know I have cancer. They know that on paper it looks really bad for me, but they just don't message, they don't really say, I'm thinking of you, I'm sending you love, I'm sending you prayers, whatever you know the person wants to send. Mm. That's really hurtful. Anyone who just sends a one-line message saying, I don't know what to say, I'm just really sad about your news, sending love. Oh my goodness, that's lovely. That's absolutely lovely. If I receive one of those from somebody, it just absolutely lifts my day. It really does, because it shows that someone's thinking of me. And it's fine if you don't know what to say.
Yeah.
And I think most cancer patients, I think, would prefer, like you were saying, would prefer to be asked, what do I say, or I don't quite understand what chemotherapy is, or radiotherapy, or whatever. I think most people would prefer to be asked. And again, I think I've put this in another of my blogs, is that the hands up system really helps me, that if you don't feel you want to talk about it, if the questions are becoming a bit too much for you for any reason, you just physically put your hands up, or if you're on the phone and or something, just I say, oh, hands up, I can't carry on with it, just hands up. And if you tell people in advance, that just means you haven't offended me, it's fine. It just means that perhaps I've had a lengthy conversation about it 10 minutes ago, or I'm a bit upset about that today, but maybe tomorrow, but just when I say hands up or put my hand up, could we just talk about the weather, what was on telly last night, what have you? And that has worked really well for me. And I, again, say that might help some listeners.
Yeah, that's a really good tip, actually. And that makes me think about a question of, related to what you were saying earlier about either wanting to look very glamorous, which you do today.
Thank you.
Or feeling a bit cancery, you said. And I wanted to ask you about that identity of having a secondary diagnosis. And like you were saying, it's very different to primary, where the aim was cure. Mm. With this, it's management and it's ongoing. Was that identity thing, has that been something that has come into what you've had to come to terms with? And do you sometimes feel as though you have to take on an identity of a woman with secondary breast cancer? Or is it something that you don't have to address all the time?
Yes, I think, and again, I very much speak for me. I know everyone is different, and I really hope I don't offend anyone or seem like I'm criticising anyone else's way of dealing with this, because it's definitely personal, and I support every cancer patient however they want to deal with it. But for me, I don't want to look cancery. And I really hope that doesn't offend people. But I remember in April 2017, we went on holiday after I'd finished all my chemo, just before I had my lymph nodes removed. And I had no eyebrows, I had no eyelashes. My hair, I lost probably about 60 to 70% of my hair. I'd cut it really short to try and minimise the loss. And I was just starting to get a little bit bald on top, but I didn't lose it all. But I have a picture that I took of myself, and I really look like a different person. And every time when I look at that picture, I just see cancer. I just see the cancer manifesting itself in my identity. And my school friends, who I've known for 20 or 30 years, we were having a laugh about it, and they were saying, God, you look awful. And we were joking about it. And it is funny how awful I look. But for me, part of dealing with this and getting back on my feet and being able to cope with the emotional side of it is looking like someone I want to look like. So for me, I want to have eyebrows, I want to wear eyeshadow and lipstick, and I've been to a Look Good Feel Better workshop, which is tremendous. I'm sure a lot of listeners have done that, and it's brilliant. And the Breast Cancer Care Secondary Cancer Weekend away that I went to, they Look Good Feel Better was there, and it was really helpful talking with other people about hints and tips of how they do their makeup, and hearing how to put on makeup and disguise some of those typical cancery issues, such as having no eyebrows or no eyelashes. And I also felt that so many other people had possession of my body, that before this, I would never have got a tattoo. I didn't really paint my nails very much. And I had a couple of scars from childhood and so on. But as going on this cancer journey, and I'd say particularly since the secondary, where I've had liver biopsy, spine biopsy, I've had mastectomy, I've had lymph node removal, I've had chest port in and out and now put in again. I've got so many scars, and the lymph node, the lymphedema, and wearing a sleeve every day. I feel like I have to some extent lost control of how I look, and it was getting to the point where getting in and out the shower, all I could see were my scars. And so I thought, well, balls to it, I'm going to get a tattoo. And I got this fantastic tattoo artist who was really sympathetic, really helpful, did a wonderful star constellation on my rib cage. And it's fantastic, because now when I get out of the shower, I see that, and I'm really pleased with that.
Yeah.
And then my niece went to have her ears pierced and was a bit nervous. And I said, well, I tell you what, I'll get mine done for a second time. So I have my ears pierced for a second time.
I thought those were
new. Yes, they're new. So yeah, I've got time. Thank you. So I never would have thought of getting that done. But these are decisions that I've made so that I can talk about exciting things with my identity. So exactly that, some people have noticed, some haven't, that I've had my ears pierced again. Everyone really wants to see the tattoo. Mm. And I think that having the impact of cancer, which you have no control over, for me, really affected how I thought of myself. And so I haven't gone clothes shopping mad, but I do really enjoy getting nice things and, as I say, really making an effort and painting my nails and just things like that that make me feel better. And I'd say to listeners, if you are feeling low, try just getting really dolled up and go to the cinema, go out for a meal if you can and if you're able, because it really, you know, if you put a really bitching pair of heels on or something, it can make you feel really, or it makes me feel really good, and it might help other people as well.
Yeah. And you've mentioned in a blog as well that you've felt more bold, definitely in your style, since your secondary diagnosis.
Yes.
And has that got anything to do with your perspective, and maybe has your perspective changed at all and allowed you to think, actually, yes, I just want to wear what I want to wear?
Yes. And I think my perspective on life has definitely changed, and I think mainly in three aspects. So first, it's about my appearance, just as I was talking about. I want to look good, and I like it, I suppose, when people say, you know, you look really glamorous, or really like that dress, or whatever it is. But I have to say, you know, I have tremendous respect for people who choose to, you know, rock a bald head and they look fantastic. And I've got some friends who have fantastic wigs, and but it's different for everyone. I know some people are very upset about how they look, and that's difficult. But for me, that's one way that my perspective has changed, is that I definitely put much more effort into my appearance. And, you know, if I look overdressed for something, or I look a bit too glamorous just to be going to the shops, or something like that, that's how I would have thought before. But now I just think, who cares? And if someone's really going to make an issue out of it, well, I've got cancer, so what are you going to say to that? You know, that's my choice. And again, as I was talking about, the second aspect where my perspective has changed is my body, that everyone else scars it. It's sort of become other people's property. And I think that's a common view in cancer patients, that your body is no longer your own, because you're constantly being jabbed with needles, you're constantly having biopsies, operations. I mean, I'd never had an operation before cancer, and now I've lost count, seven, maybe eight, nine, ten, I just don't know, and everyone leaves a scar. And I would say to other people that it's really helped me pull back my sense of identity by doing these things, by ears pierced, tattoo, and things like that. And I know I've seen other blogs by wonderful, inspirational people who've written for breast cancer care, and similarly getting tattoos instead of having just having their mastectomy scars and then having them tattooed over. And it's been really inspirational for me to see that.
Yeah, that's a huge, we've had lots of blogs around that actually, of people finding that they can reclaim their body through having a mastectomy tattoo or through celebrating it in some way. Whereas before, there's one woman who talks about, like you said, not wanting to look in the mirror at her scar, but having a tattoo made it something interesting and made it something exciting to look at, and allowed her to love her body a bit more.
Yes, and I think that's fantastic, and that's very much marries up with my way of thinking as well. And I'd say the third way that my perspective has changed is life, to put it very simply. It really, quite literally, is too short. Hopefully, you know, I've been given figures, but balls to that, because I want to live as long as I want to live. But it's statistically unlikely that I'm going to get a card from the Queen, let's put it that way. And I've also got no idea what will happen tomorrow. I mean, as I was just saying to you before we started talking, that I was having chemo yesterday, and suddenly my red blood count is again too low, so I'm going straight from here now to have a blood transfusion. So that's 10 hours for the rest of the day. And also, when I've popped in for just to have bloods done with my oncologist, suddenly, oh, it's been suspected spinal cord collapse, and then it's strapped down onto the bed and taken to hospital, and you know, you just don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. So it really is that sense of enjoy today. Don't go nuts because you've got, you know, your body physically can't cope with you going bungee jumping and doing all that stuff. But just, we go to the theatre more. We go out for nice meals. My family was always close. We're a close family. I've got four brothers and sisters. But we see each other, I think, a lot more because we've all realised how much we really mean to each other. And with my school friends as well, who I say, you know, known 20, 30 years, we did that thing where we were trying to always meet up, but there are 10 more of us. And you get that situation where, oh, well, no one can do a date for the next 6 months. Well, now sort of every month, we just meet up and whoever can make it does. And we've done fantastic things. We've had a limo ride around London. We've done the London Eye. Really manageable things for me. But it's lovely to see my friends. And you realise in this very difficult time, for me, I take the view, I either sit at home and feel cancery and just a bit sorry for myself, or I get out there and I do stuff that actually I can then talk about. So I'm not just talking about, oh yes, well, I had chemo today, I've got my lymphedema doctor tomorrow, I've got physio, I've got all those sorts of things. It's, yeah, I've had all that. But then on Wednesday night, we went to see this amazing film, and there's so much going on. And I think certainly for me, friends, family, they're brilliant. If I just say, look, could somebody organise something because I'm feeling a bit low? Mm. They do. And I sometimes say, could people just send me nice pictures of whatever they're doing today? And I get flooded with fantastic images of anything from, here's a beautiful field where I'm taking the dog for a walk, to here's my amusing child covered in ice cream, or whatever. And it's so nice. And I think sometimes, I know with other cancer patients, they feel a bit bad asking for help. They feel they're inconveniencing other people. They don't somehow feel they have the right to do that. But I would suggest, you know, what the worst that can happen is people say no. And ultimately, if they say no, well, go out on your own and go to a gallery and enjoy it. Because I think that doing stuff really helps me cope with having cancer. And having a wonderful husband who knows when to say, come on, you're wallowing, we're going out, or actually, no, you're doing a bit much, let's just have a really nice night in and, you know, watch a film. It really helps. I think it really helps. And it certainly, cancer has changed my perspective on life hugely. And I think in some ways the silver lining is I enjoyed life before and I was very happy with my life. But I've suddenly started seeing all the other stuff that makes life that bit more exciting and relaxing. I went and did yoga in the Shard and at sunrise. And yeah. I never would have thought to look for that stuff before, but it's fantastic. And I would suggest to listeners, whatever you can do physically, just try and do something, because it really, in my opinion, does make you feel uplifted.
Yeah. And you wrote another blog for us about how managing cancer is a full-time job, yes, essentially. So it sounds like a lot of those extra things you do can help you not get completely absorbed by that and only focusing on those, on treatment and on those day-to-day managerial tasks that you have to do.
Yes, I think it does, because I have appointments, some sort of cancer-related appointment, I would say at least once a day. And some of those appointments, for example, my chemo, I have 3 week cycles, and day one is usually, oh gosh, anything up to sort of 7 hours. So that's pretty much a whole day gone because I'm exhausted at the end of it. The blood transfusion, 10 hours. And so that's sort of a longer than a working day. But being able, even if, as long as I can physically do it, squeezing in yoga, going to a talk, going to the theatre, it really just takes your mind away from all of that. And you suddenly, you're not in a cancery situation, you're not in a hospital, you're not being treated. And I know that a lot of your listeners will relate to the fact that it's not just attending all the appointments, it's dealing with the endless emails, phone calls. And again, I was just saying to you before we came in that one of my appointments has been changed for the fifth time. Mm. And so it's keeping on top of that, because as a cancer patient, we've got a responsibility. If someone says, I do need to see you in a week, if something happens and that appointment doesn't come through, I've got to keep on top of that. I've got to chase for that. So you're doing that so much of the day that actually, if you can just have a break, just a half hour walk around a park, or borrow a friend's dog to take them out, or something just nice that's got nothing to do with cancer, nothing to do with treatment, and it really makes a difference, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Is there any final tips or pieces of advice you would give someone who's just been diagnosed with secondary breast cancer?
Yes, I think I would. The number one, if I could just give one piece of advice, it would be kind to yourself. Be kind to yourself. My oncologist said that to me more than once.
Did you know what that meant initially? I think that can be hard for some people to grasp.
I immediately wanted to go back to work. I worked throughout my primary cancer, and one of the questions I had was, what can I do about work? I really want to work. I love my job. I love the law. And she just said, absolutely not. Not until we can really get this under control, because she knew that it would become a full-time job. I didn't know that at that time. But I understood very clearly in the context, it was, don't try and keep on top of everything, because you can't. You need to give yourself time to have a good night's sleep before a big appointment day, before a chemo treatment. You need to give yourself time to process sometimes these very difficult diagnoses. And I mean, for me, I don't mind sharing that in the December when I was initially diagnosed, it was spine and pelvis, and we've tried lots of different chemo. My cancer's mutated, but it's now spine, pelvis, liver, lungs, bones, lymphatic system, and brain. And so I take be kind to yourself as, remember that even though I try and do a lot and I've generally got a lot of energy, sometimes I really haven't, and sometimes I really can't do much other than have an afternoon sleep. And it's about that. It's about saying to your friends and family, I can't cope with my shopping. I can't cope with the cleaning. Please, could somebody help me? And my best friend got me a cleaner, because I'd always done my own cleaning, but she got me a cleaner. Another of my best friends has sent me these amazing frozen food deliveries that are delicious, and they really take the pressure off me for cooking. It's that sort of thing. Just think, it will be different for everybody, but how can you give yourself a break? Perhaps put yourself, think of, if you've got cancer, if your friend was in your position, or a family member, what would you say to them? You'd probably say, look, don't try and rush around. Just get some help with X, Y, or Z. So I'd say, be kind to yourself is going to mean different things to different people, but just give yourself a break. Don't try and rush around and do all the stuff that you did pre-diagnosis, because you simply can't. And as we were talking about, you've just got so many appointments and things to organise and attend. You can't do everything else in your quote-unquote old life as well as that. So just try and be kind and balance it. And I'm sure that there will be people who can help. And I know that Breast Cancer Care has got the wonderful helpline. So people, if they are feeling lost, helpless, they don't know what to do, ring up. For me, that the secondary breast cancer pack that Breast Cancer Care produces is phenomenally helpful, with sections about complementary therapies, practical advice. So there, even if you don't feel you've got friends and family who are perhaps going to be the best assistance, there are charities and other organisations that I think can help. And I'd also say there are sort of, do's and don'ts. So briefly, don't blame yourself. Don't try and think of what you might have done wrong, because that just will drive you mad. And try not to stress, because I know that's so difficult, and I do stress myself, but it doesn't get you anywhere. It doesn't help. It won't change any results. So try and focus your energy on meditation, for example, which, as I said before, it really helps. And do treat yourself, whether it's a spa day or a nice meal. And do try new things, because I've tried things that never would have thought of doing before. Reflexology, I thought, you know, if I may speak frankly, I just thought it was a load of guff. And actually, it's amazing. When I was having my head frozen with the cold cap during chemo, I would fall asleep because the reflexology was so relaxing. So I would urge people, just try these things. If you know, again, in the secondary cancer care pack that you do, there's a whole section on complementary therapies. Give it a go. There'll be an organisation near you. I'm sure you can even try it for free in some way or another. So there's no harm in it. And I would also just say again, you know, you are fabulous. You are doing really well. If you've got secondary cancer, it's tough as old boots. It is difficult. But try to distract yourself. Look fabulous because you are fabulous. And don't be afraid to ask for help, because I know there are a lot of people out there who are delighted to help. And even if it's just dropping round a shop or, you know, if you just... I mean, I've even texted my husband and said, please, just could you bring home some fresh orange juice, because I'm craving some things like that. Don't be afraid to ask, because people are good people and they want to help.
I think that's really, really valuable advice. Thank you, Rebecca, and thank you for joining us today and sharing your story.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
There's also, I just wanted to mention two charities which are brilliant in terms of being kind to yourself. So there's one called Something to Look Forward To, which is for people with a cancer diagnosis, and it gives them a treat. So that could be a spa day, or that could be a dinner out with the family somewhere. So really helping people who are struggling in terms of money as well. And then there's one called Ellie's Friends, which have you heard of it?
Yes, I have.
So they give free gifts and presents to people who've also had a diagnosis. So those are two really good resources. And then, yeah, as you mentioned, we have our helpline with our breast care nurses who are there for any questions, not just treatment related questions, any concerns, or just wanting to speak to someone who isn't your friend or your family member, just to really chat about anything. And they are brilliant. But yeah, thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred podcast service to hear our next episode. If you have any questions or concerns from listening today, you can find information on our research, services and campaigning on our website at breastcancernow.org.